bad business, and they say that above the general noise. He'd played the cards well enough. Most of the lads here lived within a street or two. It was one thing to have a go at faceless bastards in uniform, but quite another to throw stones at old Fred Colon, or old Waddy, or old Billy Wiglet, who you'd known since you were 2 years old and played dead rat conkers with in the gutter. Lorne put the tweezers down and pinched the bridge of his nose. "That's it," he said wearily. "A bit of stitching and he'll be fine." "And there's some others I need you to take a look at," said Vimes. "You know, that comes as no surprise," said the doctor. "One's got a lot of holes in his feet, one dropped through the privy roof and has got a twisted leg, and one's dead."
"I don't think I can do much about the dead one," said the doctor. "How do you know he's dead? I realise I may regret asking that question."
"He's got a broken neck from falling off a roof, and I reckon he fell off because he got a steel crossbow bolt in his brain."
"Ah, that sounds like dead if you want my medical opinion. Did you do it?"
"No."
"Well, you're a busy man, Sergeant. You can't be everywhere."
The doctor's face cracked into a grin when he saw Vimes go red, and he walked over to the corpse.
"Yes, I'd say that life is definitely extinct," he said. "And
I want you to write that down, please, on paper, with official-sounding words like contusion and abrasions. I want you to write that down, and I want you to write down what time you found he was dead. And then, if you don't mind, two lads will take you down to look at the other two, and after you treated them, thank you, I'd like you to sign another piece of paper saying you did, and I called you in. Two copies of everything, please."
"All right. Dare I ask why?"
"I don't want anyone to say I did it."
"Why should anyone say that? You told me he fell off a roof."
"These are suspicious times, Doctor." "Ah, here's Fred. Any luck?" Corporal Colon was carrying a box. He put it down on the desk with a grunt.
"Old Mrs. Arbiter didn't like being knocked up in the middle of the night," he announced. "I had to give her a dollar."
Vimes didn't dare look at Lorne's face.
"Really?" he said, as innocently as possible.
"And you got the ginger beer?"
6 pints of her best stuff," said Colon. "There's 3 pence back on the bottles, by the way, and," he shuffled uneasily, "I heard they set fire to the watch house at Dolly's sister's, Sarge. It's very bad up at Knapp Hill, too, and the Chitlin Street house got all its windows broke. And up at the Least Gate house, some of the lads went out to stop kids throwing stones, and one of them drew his sword, Sarge.
And
he'll probably live, Sarge."
Dr. Lorne looked about him at the crowded office, where people were still talking. Snouty was going round with a tray of cocoa. Out in the street, some of the watchmen were standing around a makeshift fire with the remnants of the crowd.
"Well, I must say I'm impressed," he said. "Sounds like you're the only watch house not under siege tonight. I don't want to know how you did it."
"Luck played a part," said Vimes.
"And I've got 3 men who carry no personal identification whatsoever in the cells, and another anonymous would-be assassin who has been assassinated."
"Quite a problem," said Lorne. "Now me, I just have to deal with simple mysteries like what the rash means."
"I intend to solve mine quite quickly," said Vimes.
The assassin moved quietly from roof to roof until he was well away from the excitement around the watch house. His movements could be called cat-like, except that he did not stop to spray urine up against things. Eventually, he reached one of the upper world's many hidden places where several thickets of chimneys made a little sheltered space, invisible from the ground and from most of the surrounding roofscape. He didn't enter it immediately, but circled it for a while, moving with absolute silence from one vantage point to another. What would have intrigued a watcher who knew the ways of Ankh Morpork's Guild of Assassins was how invisible this one was. When he moved, you saw movement. When he stopped, he wasn't there. Magic would have been suspected, and, in an oblique way, the watcher would have been right. 90% of most magic merely consists of knowing one extra fact. At last, the figure appeared satisfied and dropped into the space. He picked up a bag from its nesting place between the smoking pots, and there was some faint swishing and heavier breathing that suggested clothes were being changed. After a minute or so, he emerged from the hidden niche, and now, somehow, he was visible. Hard to see, yes, one shadow among others, but nevertheless there in a way that he had not been before when he'd been as visible as the breeze. He dropped lightly onto a lean-to roof and thence to the ground, where he stepped into a handy shadow. Then there was a further transformation.